It's already been mentioned that, let's say about 3 months ago already, Mikey and his family were among those who participated in the Temple Aliyah trip to Israel. And many of the folks who were on that trip are here with us today, or who were on previous trips to Israel. It's a true delight to go to Israel and to come back, and I usually am blessed. I feel blessed if I get to go once in a year. But as some of you know, I actually had the chance to go yet again. I was in Israel just this past week for an unusual gathering. It was unusual in a number of respects, one of which is that I flew there on Sunday night, Monday, and I flew back on Thursday night, Friday, which is quite unusual. But what really made it unusual is that it was a gathering of cardinals, bishops, priests, and rabbis. We met at a Roman Catholic retreat and study center on the Mount of Beatitudes, which overlooks the Sea of Galilee. The Mount of Beatitudes, by the way, it's a term which may not be familiar to all of us. The word beatitude means a sense of being blessed, a sense of being feeling happy. And the reason that it's called the Mount of the Beatitudes is that one of the great sermons, the Sermon on the Mount, was given on that mountain. And it talks repeatedly about how various people are to be blessed, the meek, the poor, those who pursue peace. And of course, the Hebrew term that we use for that is Ashrei. We just chanted the Ashrei. And so in Hebrew, that mountain is called Har HaOsher. It really should be Har HaOsherim, the Mount of the Happinesses, but it's called Har HaOsher. And I think that that really describes one of the feelings that those of us who were blessed to be at that gathering felt, that sense of really feeling blessed to be together with one another, even though we come from such very different backgrounds. And there's so much dividing us that you wouldn't imagine that we would feel blessed in such a context, and yet we did feel that way. Now, what was the purpose? What was the purpose of our gathering? Well, maybe that's it. Maybe the purpose of our gathering truly was to gather. We did have an explicit agenda, which was discussed at various occasions. It was essentially to try to advance the cause of better understanding one another and to explore ways to walk and work together. Now, 50 years ago, such a gathering would have been unthinkable. The church, as we all know, traditionally viewed the Jewish people with hostility and even with contempt. And frankly, the feeling was mutual. Now, of course, given the immense power that the church possessed and the relative powerlessness of the Jewish people, it wasn't quite a symmetrical relationship, but it was certainly marked by mutual hostility and mutual lack of understanding. For over 1,800 years, the model for our relationship, the biblical model for our relationship, was the hatred between Esau and Jacob. You may recall in the Bible, we're told that Jacob and Esau were twins, but they always fought one with the other. Now on this, both the church and the Jews agreed that Esau hated Jacob. It was a war to the death, and there could be only one winner and one loser. The problem was each side thought of itself as Jacob and the other as Esau. It's perhaps hard for some of us today to understand the depth of the distance between the two that characterized our relationship during those years. But today, there are new possibilities. As Pope John the 23rd, who served from 1958 until 1963, as he understood, perhaps a better way to understand the relationship between our two faith traditions is with the phrase, "I am Joseph, your brother." Now, that phrase evokes that extraordinary reconciliation scene in Genesis, during which Joseph reveals himself to his brothers, who, in fact, as we know, had persecuted him. Now, hearing that, we might quibble with that phrase. After all, as Jews, it doesn't necessarily feel so great to be compared to Joseph's brothers, who threw him into a pit and left him for dead, or they would have if a caravan hadn't come along, and then they sold him into slavery. But frankly, let's leave that aside, because after all, Pope John the 23rd's given name was Giuseppe, or Joseph, and he had true brotherly feelings for the Jews. After all, he's credited with saving many, many Jews during the Holocaust, and it's he who established Vatican II, the Second Vatican Council, the Vatican Council that published the famous piece entitled Nostra Aetate, In Our Time, the declaration of the relationship, a new relationship between the Church and non-Christian religions, including Judaism. That document completely transformed the relations between the Catholic Church and the Jewish people. So I think that Pope John the 23rd gets a pass for that, and I think that we're in his debt, frankly, all of us. We will be celebrating the 50th anniversary of Nostra Aetate in October of this year. Now, 50 years may seem like a long time, but it's not. It's really very short compared to the almost 2,000 years of mistrust and of course, persecution. It's taken us a very long time and will continue to take time to get beyond that. But this gathering was a, how should I put it? It was a step in the process. And let me just give you an example of what I mean. It's kind of hard to capture. I sort of feel somewhat bad that I don't have photographs to give you, because a picture is worth 1,000 words. And I'm going to be putting out another email to the congregation, at least, in which I'll have some of these pictures, which capture so much. There's one picture I have of two men standing at the entrance to this Domus Galilei, it's called, Beit HaGalil, the House of the Galil. And they're smiling, and they have their arms around each other, and above them is a sign that they put on the top of Domus Galilei, which says, Shalom, welcome. It's very, very nice. Now, these two men actually both reside in the city of Dusseldorf in Germany. They're both German natives. They both live in Germany. One is a Catholic priest in Dusseldorf. One is an Orthodox rabbi in Dusseldorf. They had never met until that day. And that in itself, I think, says a lot. I got to know and really found myself enjoying discussions with an Orthodox rabbi from Belfast. And there was a moment when he and a priest from the Domus were joining together in the singing around the bonfire celebrating Lag BaOmer with a statue behind them of the Pope. Now, I don't know, you have to be there, but I think you can use your imagination that there are these moments that you just can pinch yourself and ask yourself, are you really imagining this, or is this really, really happening? Now, let me just say that this process has required not only rethinking in an intellectual sense on both of our parts, but it's required a lot of cheshbon ha-nefesh, a lot of true soul searching, and frankly, teshuvah, repentance. And I must say, from listening to my colleagues, and it's a privilege to refer to people that I was meeting with as colleagues. I remember the first evening that I was there, I got to schmooze with the Cardinal of Vienna. On the other side of the Cardinal was a woman who later said to me how amazing it felt to her to be there, because her mother had been a refugee from Vienna. Her mother had been forced to leave Vienna, had managed, had been blessed to be able to leave Vienna just on the eve of World War II. And here she was having a conversation with the Cardinal, who's responsible for all of the Catholic parishes in Vienna. It was really quite extraordinary to imagine yourself beginning a conversation. And it seems to me that this kind of typifies the process, which is not a short process, not a simple process that needs to go on in many, many places. It's interesting. We had Eugene Korn spoke at this assemblage, and he is a scholar of theology, Christian theology and Jewish theology. And he gave a very, very good presentation of the history of Jewish and Catholic relations. By the way, he has an article in a book that was recently published that was edited by our own Rabbi Gil Rosenthal, who's here with us. A number of people at this gathering had articles in the book that was published by Gil Rosenthal. And at one point, he stopped and said, but I just have a simple question to ask you. You know, he was doing all of this very abstract theologizing. And then he said, how many people have ever read Nostra Aetate, this declaration of the Catholic Church from 50 years? How many people have actually read it and studied it? And very few people had actually read it and studied it. And then he told us, well, you know, it is only four paragraphs. It's only four paragraphs. It's not a huge text to learn. And think about it. If these leaders from all across the world, and by the way, we had a rabbi from Hong Kong together with a Catholic prelate from Hong Kong. We had people from all over Italy and Spain and Chile and Argentina and all over the world. I mean, we had to attend all sessions with speakers so that we could understand one another. Most of the Catholic priests spoke in Italian, wherever they happened to be serving, and most of the rabbis spoke in either Hebrew or English. So we had to overcome a lot of just misunderstanding over the years, but we also had to, we have work to do. We have study to do. We have to learn, in fact, what has been written and what is still today being written. I have here an amazing pamphlet published by the American Jewish Committee called Turning the Tide of Christian-Jewish Relations. We may not know this, but there have been gatherings of the representatives from the chief rabbinate in Israel with the Vatican, representatives from the Vatican, and they've been producing documents about the many, many things that we have in common. For example, here's a statement that was published in 2010, which I think bears listening to. He talks about the document, which was a joint statement by the bilateral commission meeting of the chief rabbinate of Israel's delegations for relations with the Catholic Church and the delegation of the Holy See's commission for religious relations with the Jews. Talk about all the values we have in common, and then listen to this. In the course of history, religious communities have not always been faithful to these values. Therefore, there is a special obligation upon religious leaders and communities to prevent the improper use of religion and to educate toward respect for diversity, which is essential in order to ensure a healthy, stable, and peaceful society. We have this document, again, the chief rabbinate, the Vatican, talking about the value of diversity as a religious vision. There's some truly remarkable things happening, and I was very privileged to be a part of this process in a very, very small way. It seems to me that we have to study Nostra Aetate, and we also have to study within each of our respective traditions texts that, in fact, condemn the other, perhaps inappropriately, not respectfully. It seems that we have our work cut out for ourselves, but there is a great deal that we do have in common, and there is a great deal of progress that we can make together. You know, we sat around talking about what we think of as the mission of the Jewish people in the world today, and what do we think of the mission of the Catholic Church in the world today? We think about the challenge of transmitting faith to the next generation. How do we suggest we begin down that process? And, of course, in the face of the tragic reemersion of anti-Semitism that's taken very, very seriously by the Catholic Church, the reemergence of xenophobic fundamentalism, and after so many people of faith from different religious traditions are being killed, how can we act together to try to address this? One of the texts that we took a look at, and which I think it would be nice to conclude with, is a text from Micah, chapter 4, which really, I think, contains a number of themes that actually we kept walking around during our stay, and that gave us all hope because we both consider the book of Micah to be sacred text, to be sacred scripture. Let's go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the temple of the God of Jacob. And it's true, the mountain of the Lord is usually understood to be Jerusalem, but Mount of the Beatitudes kind of served very, very well this purpose. It was a beautiful, beautiful place. And the Lord will teach us his ways so that we can walk in his paths. May Torah, or wisdom, or learning, go forth from Zion, and may the word of the Lord go forth from Jerusalem. Ki mitzion teitzei Torah, udvar Adonai mirushalayim. And may they beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. And may nation no longer lift up sword against nation, nor learn war any more. But may we all sit under our own vine and under our own fig trees, and not be afraid, for the Lord has spoken. All the nations may walk in the names of their gods, and we will walk in the name of the Lord our God forever and ever. My hope, really, for all of us, is that this signals this kind of a gathering, which I learned was referred to in the Catholic tradition as a convivence of rabbis. I never heard that term before. Happy to adopt it. What can I say? I hope that this serves as just one small step in achieving greater understanding and, in fact, reaching beyond some of the traditional boundaries that we in fact, create around ourselves to build coalitions with those who share important values and with whom we have much work to do. Shabbat Shalom.